Blog Talk Radio.
You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to be. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logic.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerve Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerve.
Happy holidays, season's greetings, and folks, you're not hallucinating, this is the Grindhouse Saturdays. But this is a experimental broadcast in the sense that in the last couple of times, we've decided to do mashup. So this is going to be a mashup Grindhouse edition where the lines are blurred between Afro Nerd Radio and the Comic Shop. We'll be discussing pop, pulp, and politics in the same two-hour blast. So hold on to your horses. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. And I see that the uncanny Daryl B, because I was about to dig in. Where is he? He is in the house. I think that I saw him beaming in. So let's go to a quick groove, folks. Let's go to a Yuletide groove. You know, we are in the Christmas season, holiday season. So it would be apropos to give you a little bit of Christmas funk. Christmas Afropunk. I should remind you also, folks, that this Wednesday we're scheduled to speak to some folks who are directly involved with the Afropunk Festival coming up in 2014, Jocelyn Cooper and Matthew Morgan. So the folks from Afropunk are here for, hopefully, fingers crossed, this Wednesday. It should be quite insightful. 8 p.m., though. 8 p.m., so don't forget that. Anyway, give me the best of urban alternative groove, nerdcore, afropunk, black rock, psychedelic soul. Let's go to some Yuletide groove. This is Screaming Headless Torsos, Dead Christmas Tree, straight from afropunk.com. Let's groove.
So sad to me.
Rockefeller tree, all dressed up and nowhere to go. Mickey and Goofy dance around the golden calf. Sacrifice, he's no belief on high. Next thing you know, it's a Goofy ride. That Christmas tree looks so sad to me. So sad to me, dead Christmas tree, yeah.
All right, folks, again, screaming headless torsos, dead Christmas tree, giving the best of Afropunk. And again, folks, Afropunk.com, we're having some folks coming by from Afropunk this Wednesday, so stay tuned, 8 p.m. All right, without further ado, let's get to our own podcast enterprise crew. First up, Captain Kirk, you needed an engineering. Let's get to it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Then, of course, the uncanny Daryl B.
Sorry for the lateness, guys. Got caught up in the championship games, but I'm here now.
Terrific. Listen, Daryl, I sent you an email on this thing. We would decided to do a mashup show. You know, once a month we figured we'd do this experiment where we kind of mash up stuff. So can you hang on going into the second hour if you can?
Yeah.
If you can't.
Yo, let's do it.
That's right. Okay. Listen, I'm glad you showed up because I would have been like, this is not the show to miss because this particular week, for whatever reason, a lot of news dropped down and more internet chatter, more internet discombobulation. Let's put it that way. Let's just dig on in. Let's just dig. Gal Gadot. Who the hell is she? Why the hell is she? She is attractive, no doubt. She's worthy of being in AfroNerd's passenger seat with her painted toenails. That's for sure. I'm just not sure if I want her as my Wonder Woman. I'm not sure. Daryl,
hey.
Unpack this for us. What the hell is going on?
Okay, Gal Gadot, ex-Israeli military soldier, okay, turned model, all right? More recently known from the Fast and Furious series. And if you saw any of the last three, or more specifically the last two, 5 and 6, She can hold her own action flicks, okay? And I'll say it like that. This, of course, is a move where I think Warner Brothers and DC did not want to pay for Jamie Alexander or didn't want to look like they were going after Marvel talent, you know? They didn't want to have that appearance. So I just find it funny on the same week that Paul Walker dies and condolences to his family that they would make this move that is kind of tangentially connected to the Fast and Furious movies. It's a creepy coincidence. I'm not going to say it was calculated. I'm just going to say whenever DC does a move like this or Warner Brothers does a move like this, there's a quality of bad timing. So that dampens my enthusiasm for her. But I say she has the charm and she has the Mediterranean look that I've always imagined Wonder Woman to have. Again, the main complaint I've heard is her body. She's too skinny. But it's 2013, 2014, going to be 2015 when this comes out. There are ways and angles to get around that. But she does have the chops to pull it off, and she has the beauty to pull it off. All right? Now, will it happen? Captain will bring up that this will be the 6th or 7th false start for a Wonder Woman movie if it doesn't get off the ground. All right, and I will say what I always said with every one of these Warner Brother projects, I'll believe it's happening when I'm in the theater with my drink and my M&Ms in hand, looking up at the screen, and here comes Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. Captain?
Well, before we go to the Captain, hold on for a second. Let's go to another blurred, a word I hate actually, blurred, the black nerd on YouTube, who has a pretty decent following. He went in on this Gal Gadot thing, but he went in on it a bit more positively. So let's play a few moments of the black nerd on YouTube discussing Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. Hold on.
Wonder Woman! Wonder Woman! All the world is waiting for you! And we'll get you in 2015! In your fat and tight! I'm a black nerd and I'm angry. We have a Wonder Woman that's going to be in a movie. Can you believe it?
You're welcome. I've said it like 50 billion times in my videos and now it's finally happened. I think Zack Snyder watches Black Nerd Comedy. Just going to call it.
Everything I said about Man of Steel, Zack Snyder, is true.
So you have to pick this gal as Wonder Woman.
Gadot, Gadot, get it?
Gadot, chocolates. Congratulations, you're Wonder Woman. Rocket, yeah, the pressure's on. I do not want to be you. Congratulations, but your scrutiny is going to be hardcore. Because you can have a million men screw up a superhero film, but you have one woman screw it up, and that's it. So of course you would think everybody would be super excited about this, right? But no. Believe it or not, the internet has a problem with it.
Oh, she's too skinny. You can't have a Wonder Woman, she needs to have more muscles.
Yeah, because she just got cast and the movie comes out in 2015 and there's no possible way that she could actually do anything to make herself more muscly, like, I don't know, work out, beef up or anything like that. Just like when Tobey Maguire was super skinny, Spider-Man, he didn't do anything to himself. She's just gonna not do a thing. She's gonna coast by. Maybe she'll even eat some donuts or something. Just get fat, have a fat Wonder Woman. We don't know. Fat Amazon. Actually, she may not do anything. You know, yes, it is Hollywood.
Oh, it should have been Jamie Alexander.
I get it. You wanted her to be Jamie Alexander. We all wanted her to be Jamie Alexander. You know who was not going to want her to be Jamie Alexander? Marvel.
Hello, Warner Brothers. This is Disney. You're trying to take one of our Marvel gals for your Batman Superman picture. You think we're going to play that? You want to mess with the mouse, son?
Let's not have this conversation again, Warner Brothers. Because again, we'll send Galactus to eat you because we own Galactus. Disney out.
All right. Again, folks, that's Black Nerd Comedy. YouTube this cat. It's a much longer clip but because of time constraints I was going to go into, but you get the gist. Actually, he was more supportive of this. He felt that there's even, like, you know, breast concerns. We know that Linda Carter was a far more fuller-bodied woman. That's the Wonder Woman archetype that we grew up with. So some would liken her to look like that and maybe even beyond that, to be honest with you. But he felt that this actress should be given a good shot, and we'll see what happens. Captain, what are your thoughts on Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman?
I'm neither here nor there with this decision. You see, if I'm a suit and I'm making a decision and I want to be lazy, this is what I do. Realize you're not a genius. You're a money guy. You control the money guy. You control the money. You're not genius. You're not a genius. You're in a position of power. So make your job easy. I would go right to the internet and let the geeks tell me, give me 12 picks of who you would like to see as Wonder Woman. Then we work backwards from there. What does that mean? That means now we get into all the politics. How much is this person going to cost? Who is available? How much star power do we have? And then we try to get the best mix from there. That's it. That's all I would do. Now, make it real easy. You're not a genius. You're a decision maker, but you're not a genius, even though you think you're a genius. You're not. You know? Those are the guys they have over there at Fort Meade and everything else, working in the bunkers and everything, doing all of that other stuff. You know, black programs and everything else. That's a whole other story. But this decision, time will tell. I'm not against it. I'm not for it. You know, time will just tell, and we see how it works out. You know, I like the fact that they're actually finally trying to go forward with a Wonder Woman installment. You know, they bring in an actual physicality of a person as Wonder Woman. I like that. But we'll see what happens. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, let's actually open up the lines. We have a, I see we have a call, so let's go to the caller and see what they have to say about this thing. I would just say that, you know, the part about her being part of the Israeli army, which I'm aware of, that intrigues me. Maybe she does have the grit because, you know, I don't know if she's Mossad level. Well, she could have been. I don't know. But when you put that tagline on someone and you put that in their resume, that they were part of the Israeli army, that implies that she should be able to withstand some grit, that she should be able to do what's required. Two other things also I should note. One, I'm not so comfortable with Wonder Woman wearing the iconic costume for this thing. And I've heard from female nerds, female geeks that feel the same way. As much as I love the female form, and part of me would like to see that look, the reality part of me feels you can't have men in suits and the woman in a bikini fighting. There's something about I don't like it in comic books. Maybe 20 years ago, you know, we had different sensibilities. We have new sensibilities now, and you just do not want to see that. So I think she should be wearing some pants, to be honest with you. Maybe some tight-fitting pants to accentuate her femininity. But she's got to be on par in this trinity. We know that the DC trinity is Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, and she is equal to these two. She is an equal participant, and you can't have her in bikini in a star spangled bikini. That's just going to be whack. And also, conversely, if you're going to be fair, just as the men have to go through a grueling workout program to bring what we've seen in the books to the screen, that female has to do the same thing. This young lady has to do the same thing. She needs to get in the barbells, get the fitness training. You have enough time, enough money, enough motivation to do what you need to do. Now, being that she's thin, has a small frame, if you put 25, 30 pounds on her at 5'9", she should be straight, to be honest with you. That's what I want to see. Then I'll shut my mouth. This may be a Heath Ledger thing. It's got to be. So let's go open up the lines, and we'll get into it. Okay, caller.
I'm 100% racist. Nigger.
Can you believe that? Wow. Wow. Incredible. You know, a show called Afro Nerd, where we deal with higher intellectual thought. This is not a minstrel show. For someone to think they could do that on a show like this, ladies and gentlemen, when your president is black, whoever this is, get over it. I'm sorry. And your Lex Luthor may be black as well. So you can live in the 18th century while the rest of us are in the 21st century. That's it.
All right, well, getting back to the topic, let me just say this. Having served with members of the Israeli military and seen them work out, believe me, a little workout, if you've lasted a week with the Israeli military and she lasted 2 years, all right, if you lasted a week, then any amount of working out you can handle. So if you give her a workout option, she's got it in her makeup to be able to do it. Let me just say it like that, because I served with guys who we would do 10 minutes of physical training before to start each day, 10 to 30 minutes, and they'd be crying. They'd be dead with the kind of physical training that Israeli military guys do. And we're talking upwards 1 to 2 hours. You know, using weapons, you know, so, hey, I think she could handle whatever workout she needs to get bigger. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Well, that's what I was saying, is that the fact that they threw that little caveat in there, Daryl, gives me a little bit of some assurance because, as you said, the Israeli army, they are infamous for having grueling workout routines, that men and women serve equally, that they're far more progressive when it comes to women being in that army, and that they're not second rate. There's a whole mythology with the Israeli army. So if she was involved with the Israeli army, I'm led to believe she gave the suits assurances, I will do what is necessary to be Wonder Woman. You have to become Wonder Woman. God bless Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill, from my understanding, really wanted to be Superman, that he talked about this for many years before he actually got the part. And he came in correct. We could have discussions about Man of Steel, even the black nerd, again referencing the YouTube gentleman, even he has his problems with Man of Steel. But you cannot, at least the physicality of Man of Steel, he came in, he's probably the living embodiment. We could talk fondly of Christopher Reeve, but as far as coming in as a physical presence for making you suspend disbelief that this man is powerful, he came correct. And God bless all the other characters when it comes down to Hemsworth and Chris Evans, those guys, all these male actors did what was required. We need to see this. If she's who she is, you got to do the same thing. That's just the way it is. Captain, you had something else to respond, some other comment?
No, that was it. That was it. Nothing more to add.
All right. Segueing from Gal Gadot. Daryl, did you hear about this notion that they really want to do some kind of multi-ethnic version of the JLA? A lot of things are coming out now. Let me unpack it for our audience so they know exactly what I'm talking about. If you go to comicbookmovie.com, it's an excellent site, comicbookmovie.com. Not just them. I think Screen Rant. There's a few other culture websites that are reporting that the WB, that they're looking into giving you a different Justice League visually to balance out what Marvel has done or what they have failed to do. This is a jab at them, maybe, have failed to do with the Avengers. So they want to give you more of an international view through this upcoming Man of Steel segueing into the Justice League. Matter of fact, this Man of Steel 2, which could be a critique unto itself, is turning out to be more like a Justice League movie with more and more folks being attached to this thing. We heard Nightwing early on. We're hearing The Flash. They're talking about a Flash of Hispanic origin. Of course, we have a Mediterranean, or I should say an Israeli, or someone with a Mediterranean look for Wonder Woman, and names like Idris Elba and Denzel Washington, and the actor, I should know his name, the actor that plays Oliver Queen's stepdad in Arrow. These gentlemen have been tossed out there to potentially be Lex Luthor. Now, you know how this goes when you deal with cross-racial casting. I've had issues with it, but I will tell you this. When they threw Denzel Washington's name in the mix as Lex Luthor, I quieted down. And I see that it's causing a confusion with the nerds. The nerds, when it's a whack actor, they're very quick to say, forget about it. When they mention Denzel's name as Luthor, all of a sudden, not that some of them still have their problems, many of them are saying, you know what, I might want to see that. Daryl, unpack this for us.
I think someone from Warner Brothers heard our show last week. What did we say one of the major failings was with DC? It was too lily white. And I know there's fans out there that say, I want it exactly like the comic book. Well, if you want it exactly like the comic book, then in the Superman and Batman worlds, you won't see a hint of a black person unless they're a drug dealer, unless they're a pimp, a hoe, outside of Lucius Fox and Ron Troop. Raise your hands if anybody remembers who Ron Troop is. We'd be totally frozen out, and not just us.
Well, Ron Troop was Supes's brother-in-law, right?
Yes. Who started out as a reporter who actually tried to take Clark Kent's place during the whole Death of Superman trilogy. And he delivered the report, which showed the cyborg Superman attacking the White House. Well, not attacking the White House, but quote-unquote introducing himself to the president. And that's what made his bones, and eventually he married Lois Lane's sister. Again, something that when they created the new universe, they wiped out. But here's the important thing to me. He was an actual, physical, solid black character who is normal in the Superman universe. I'm not saying Steel isn't normal, but he's something to aspire to. But there was never a regular black character in the Superman universe until Ron Troop. All right? So I digress from there. Back to this. There's a couple of problems I have with this, though. We know what Warner Brothers' theories are in cross-hatching their universes. You're not going to get a Hispanic Flash. Why? Because Barry Allen knocked it out of the park on Green Arrow, and we know that they're planning a series for him on the CW. So you're not going to get that, all right? You're going to get an actor looking close to that, you know, for the movie, but you're not going to get a Hispanic Flash now, all right? So, folks, they like to keep it, oh, we're going to make it streamlined. Then you're not going to get that. As far as the Lex Luthor thing, you know what? Hey, I will say this. Some of those comments by some of those people about oh, we'd love Denzel in the role, I call you guys hypocrites. Why? Because I remember some of your names commenting on Michael Clark Duncan as Kingpin. And you guys went, oh, he can't be, no. And even after Clark did out of the park as Kingpin, you still ripped that. But it's Denzel Washington. I don't want to look too racist. I can't deny saying that he wouldn't look that good in the role. I don't want to do that. Hypocrites. Would I love to see Denzel as Lex Luthor? You know what? I would. I would love to see that, all right? As long as they have a plan to follow up on it. Captain often says, and this is where I give Captain credit, all right? If you're going to do the move, stick to it, all right? This has got to be a plan. You don't just throw a name like Denzel Washington out and onto the wall like, Denzel as Lex Luthor. Oh, that's great. Without doing research and having a plan as to the line of movies. Who knows? We've seen it before. Denzel likes action-adventure fantasy-type movies, all right? We've seen him pull off roles like this before, but just not as a bad guy. He's been grounded. He's been in more realistic movies. But if you ever saw Man of Fire, pull off Lex Luthor really good. Captain, floor is yours, man.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see what Denzel does do with the role. But I think another pick is actually better. You know, though Denzel is an award-winning actor, not to take anything from him, I think Arrow's stepfather, I think, is really the best person. That's just me right now at a glance. I've not taken anything from Denzel. I just think he would be suited a bit better, I think, in that role. Now, if we go head-to-head, you know, in other things, and we look at body of work, you know, Denzel definitely is the man. But for that particular role, I think he would be suited just a little bit better. But it would be extremely interesting just to see. And that would definitely get people in the theater, regardless. Just to see what's going on. Let me see how he did it. Let me see how he moved. Even if he didn't nail it, doesn't matter. It's Denzel. So you can't knock him on that. You know,
again, this is going to be one of those where if it happens, yo, if DC would find a way to mess this up, you know, just pack up and go home. Him as one of the greatest villains in literature ever. And they'd mess this up? Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. You could write it in if it happens and they mess it up. You could write it in like a whole month of shows would be nothing about except the evil Daryl B. freaking just ripping to shreds Warner Brothers for messing this up.
Oh, man.
That's funny.
I guess my concern, though, we're hearing so many things about this movie, and I've said it countless times before, gentlemen. It come off as if they're just throwing things against the wall.
Oh, yeah.
Just against the wall to see if something will stick. But throw someone like Denzel in the mix, and also the fact that Denzel doesn't come cheap. You would have to – I mean, a film like this, you're figuring this is going to be, worst-case scenario, a $700 million film. Unless, I mean, if it's going to – I can't even say that. I can't imagine it sucking, but I'm thinking the opening on a film like this, the expectation of seeing it, just the first time out, that's got to be $200 million at least that first weekend going in that arena. If it's fairly decent, if it's half decent, you're going towards a billion. Or me, you know, the sky's the limit. So you might take the chance with a Denzel Washington who's going to be asking $20, $25 million. Then he's going to be asking for a percentage of the back end. You better have a billion-dollar franchise in order to balance out all the other people that have multi-million-dollar paychecks. But my thinking is, for me as a fan, I would want to see Denzel because he would balance out all the other crap that's going on. He would balance it out. And you could say what you want to say, the man is mesmerizing on screen. Anytime they show him, you want to forget about Batman and Superman. When's Lex coming? I mean, you know, and we've seen him practice badassery before. You know, we've seen him in as American Gangster. You know, as on top of the corrupt cop in Training Day. So he's done a number of films where he's played that kind of guy. I mean, even in Glory, he was an a-hole. So he can do that. But if he does it on a corporate level, forget about it. So I'm excited. I don't know if it's going to actually happen, but it does seem to be out there that an African-American Lex is under consideration. And maybe someone like Zack Snyder might pull that off just for S and giggles. So I am intrigued. And in answer to Daryl, who said that all these other fans seem to be more open to Denzel but less open about Michael Clark Duncan. I think the difference is we have seen so many iterations of Superman that maybe we can go there this time. Even if, this is why it doesn't bother me as much as well, because normally I would be the guy that would be very much a stickler for okay, let's try to stay close to canon. But there's been we've been seeing Superman on screen since the 40s. If you throw in the serials into the George Reeves era, into Christopher Reeve, and all these other Smallville, we've seen so many iterations of Superman that it might be time for a Black Lex Luthor. Daredevil, that was the first time out. You know, you might want to see more of what you grew up with, but there's less of an excuse, in my opinion, when there's countless iterations of Batman, countless iterations of Superman. Then you can start becoming more experimental. I would not want to see the same lame interpretation of any of these heroes if they've been out there for so long. So that's my thought process. All right, listen. Daryl?
No, I go like I see your point. All I'm just saying, all right, is these fans who come at like this, remember, Marvel has always played to integration on a smaller scale, mind you, but integration of their communities during their films, all right? DC's never tried that. Well, they did early with Billy Dee Williams as Harvey Dent, but never followed up on it. All right? So they've done it in drips and drabs, but they always get held back by whatever, whether it be economic, social, or whatever holds them back. All right? The one thing this Batman Superman film can say is, if not Lex Luthor, they do have to make it more multicultural. They really do. Because you are selling to more markets than the white, nerdy male fan. You are selling overseas dollars you're trying to get also. All right? That's all I'm saying. You do have to make it. It's time to grow with the times, y'all. It's time to grow with the times. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
All right, let's. Well, we may delve into that a bit more after the musical break. I'm going to go to Covina Man quickly in our chat room. He says, that's a reach right now, talking about Denzel. It's setting it up for failure. Once they go with a generic white guy, and then he says, there's a lot of Ben Affleck haters that will not go to the movie because he is in the film. And then he says, I hate Lex Luthor, actually. Why keep bringing up the same villains? Well, I think in this case, this is going to be a bit different, Covina, because, first of all, he's not going to be the main guy in Man of Steel, for my understanding. And this will be a different, I would suspect it would be a different, well, I know it's going to be a different Lex Luthor, because it's going to look at him from the corporate side. He's not going to be some weird criminal scientist, which is what they've done with the Gene Hackman and even with the Kevin Spacey version. We're going to see a guy that really cannot be touched, that he's going to be more of a Donald Trump-esque person. And also, he's not. You can't take away Lex Luthor away from the Superman mythology. I just think that what will make it good is that he will not be the focal guy. They're talking about Metallo, maybe. I mean, we're talking about science fiction now. We're getting more, hopefully in quotes, more of the Superman that we would want to see. Doomsday has been discussed. So they're going in a different direction. So I have no problems with other, or even Brainiac. So you're getting other villains and then have Lex Luthor pulling the strings in the background. That makes more sense to me. Then he says, Zod is one of the worst Superman villains, only outdone by the fool with the backward name guy, Mixopetalik, is what you're talking about. Well, listen, some of that stuff you're not going to see, that's a cartoon. I doubt we'll see that. But I think you may want to expand your thoughts on this one, Covina, because, again, it looks as if Lex Luthor would not be the central villain, but he will be the Metropolis. He will be the Metropolis corporate raider, pulling strings in the background. Dow, you would agree with that, right? I mean, that's no big deal with him being in it this time around.
Yeah. Who's to say it isn't the strings he pulls that set Batman and Superman on their collision course? Who's to say that it isn't Lex Luthor tweaking both heroes, putting them against each other? Hopefully they knock each other off, and in that power vacuum, Lex rises, similar to his presidential campaign in the comic books, similar to what he did in Young Justice Invasion, where I'm not physically getting involved, but I'm the puppet master, and I'm going to work out all of these situations so they benefit me. Either hero dies, bonus for me. Both die, then I'm ready to take control. Lex Luthor, classic.
Yeah, and again, ladies and gentlemen, and specifically the Covina Man, what made more specifically, Superman, what was the last one? Superman Returns. What makes that, you know, more problematic, that once again, you know, in 1977 or 78, you had Lex Luthor as the main guy, and then in 2006, you had him as the main guy. That is whack, but I don't perceive them doing it. They can't do it that way. They just can't. He can't be
he can't be the main guy directly. So I don't know. I don't know. All right, let's go to a quick Yuletide groove, folks. This is the Christmas season, or pardon me, the holiday season. Let's go to again, Yuletide groove. This is Groove Things performing Funky Christmas. Doesn't get any better, folks. We'll be right back. Groovy there, folks. Again, speaking of groovy, that's Groove Fangs. Groove Fangs. Funky Christmas. Give you the best of urban alternative groove, and this time Yuletide groove. This is the Midweek in Review. Midweek. I'm losing it now, folks. This is the Grindhouse, pardon me, the Grindhouse edition of Afternoon Radio / The Comic Shop, the mashup this time. We're really blurring the lines. Once a month we decide to do this, where we just kind of have Daryl B., the uncanny Daryl B., sit in when we discuss just about everything, pop, pulp, and politics. The call-in number, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Moving things along, talk about actually just everything's just blowing up now. Let's talk about the Amazing Spider-Man trailer. Rather lengthy, disturbingly lengthy, I thought. Excellent trailer. I, you know, in my opinion, it was excellent, but pushing 3 minutes for a trailer, I almost feel like I saw the film. Let's go to the captain this time. Captain, what are your thoughts about this ASM2 trailer?
Well, here's the thing, what you have to realize when you're dealing with these superhero slash superheroine movies in Hollywood. I'll give you an analogy. A lot of these movies are like one-night stands from a sexual standpoint. Cheap sex. You do what you do, and you don't think about it anymore. You enjoyed the moment, and that's it. Then you have these other type of one-night stands where it's great sex, but you're running down the woman trying to find out who this woman was that you slept with because emotion was transferred that night. You're thinking, maybe, am I in love? Why am I losing my mind? Why am I still thinking about her? So you spend your time running down this woman. What am I talking about here? Avengers, Iron Man, and the Batman trilogy, those movies were in that vein, that woman that you were running down. Because Hollywood nailed these movies. These movies were nailed. So you see, it's not that easy to do. Then, since we're still talking about salacious remarks here, you have movies that are also blue balls. Green Lantern, got blue balls. Ghost Rider movies, blue balls. Now, looking at this Spider-Man trailer here, I would say it's somewhere between that romantic night that you're running down and cheap sex at this given time. It looks like it will be a legitimate movie based on that trailer. I don't know if it'll be as good as the first Spider-Man. I know we have different universes and everything else, but just as far as Spider-Man is concerned, I think the first Spider-Man movie was the best so far. You had good character development. They interacted very well. But
you're talking about Tobey Maguire. You're talking about the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man?
Yes. Yes. That
okay.
One. That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about. I think that was the best Spider-Man so far. Now, this, of course, you know, being, you know, different universe and everything else from that, but this looks like this will be a legitimate movie. There's a lot going on in the trailer. It's a lot going on. Good special effects and everything else, but it looks totally legitimate. It looks very solid. It looks like we will have a good movie. Now, will it be as good as these other movies I just mentioned? I don't know, but we shall see. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
You know, I will say one thing, though. About that trailer, although I get uncomfortable when they really show you too much, and I think that's a common complaint for moviegoers, that they just show you too much. Visually, being that although this is Marvel, it's a Sony product, I could honestly see that style of movie, the way that it looks, I could see it fitting in comfortably with the Marvel Entertainment Universe that we see with the Avengers and Thor and Captain America. For some reason, the X-Men Fox version of Marvel, to me, doesn't seem like it would be a great fit. But I could see Spider-Man, just based on that trailer, I could see him comfortably moving toward a Marvel connection, that is Marvel Entertainment connection with these other characters, if they decide to go there. There's been talk about that. I think it's an eventuality at some point, because from my understanding, Sony's having financial problems, so maybe they might have. But that's one thing that really is an issue with me, is that these other universes that are still under the Marvel umbrella and yet they cannot interact. The fact that Spider-Man cannot interact in Manhattan with the Avengers in the cinematic universe, just it's annoying. And I don't understand how it's the major issue. They've got to figure out a way to get around that. Darryl, what are your thoughts on this Spider-Man trailer, Spider-Man 2?
Well, can I say one thing first?
Go for it.
Okay. I understand your pain. But they can't give you everything all at once. You know, they can't give you everything all at once. Once they get tired, then they'll be left with no choice in doing what you just mentioned. They can't give it to you all at once.
No, that's not what it is. This is simply because you have
Marvel was in financial straits. I mean, everyone knows the
of
story.
Of course,
Marvel
that's
was in financial straits.
That's part of it.
And they had to part out some of their characters to different movie houses. And now that they're back on top with Disney, they regret it. I know they regret it because that's the part that makes these movies. I mean, the fact that there was talk. I don't know if we actually spoke about this, but there was talk about their expanding. Well, Fox says that the X-Men, they want to expand their universes. That's something they threw out there. Spider-Man, now we're hearing, whatever that means, Spider-Man, they want to expand his universe. Everyone wants to try to get Avengers money. That's the reality. You know, when you have an Iron Man character pretty much made double what this Spider-Man made, that's because he was part of an expanded universe. These solo films aren't making it. I mean, they'll make a lot of money, but they're not making billion-dollar status money, not by themselves. I think Spider-Man, the original one with Tobey Maguire, was a billion-dollar enterprise. This one's doing very well, but that's what's lacking. When you have Thor, who is a tertiary character, making close to $700 million, I mean, come on. That's because he's tied to a greater universe. His universe is expanded, but with Spider-Man, you know, what kind of expansion are you talking about if you're not going to link him up to the X-Men or, more specifically, the Avengers? Darryl, what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is the captain's always right, all right, when it comes to this. These suits, they at the time back then, even in the discussions now, they never think about ahead. They never think about future. They think about gains now. Never once. If you had a true nerd in those meetings, he'd be like, well, you know, keep the door open because you never know down the line we can expand. We got big universes here with plenty of characters. We want to make it possible that we do joint movies, you know. Of course, you'll still have input into these things because you're running the movie and we don't want to step on your toes. But at the same time, we want to make it so that it is feasible in the future to do 2, 3, 4, 5 character movies. You know, no one ever thought about that in those rooms, all right? Which is hilarious since Marvel and DC, I'm including DC in this because you know the battles we've had over this, you know, lack the foresight to think of these things. As far as the trailer goes, it looks like that they knew they messed up with the character work in the first one, and we're going to go all action in the second one. We're throwing everything out there. We're going to go crazy. That's what the trailer says to me, all right? Again, I'm in your camp where a trailer, the longer a trailer is, the more sucky the movie usually, all right? And when it hit the minute 30 mark, I was like, how long is this trailer going? This is not a good sign. But I can't help it. The geek in me saw the trailer and was like, hey, this looks kind of good. But again, I'm seeing some of the same failings in the trailer that was in the first movie. So, hey, you know what, Sony? You messed up the first one. Prove it. Prove it on this one that you've recovered your mistakes. A trailer ain't going to satiate me on this, all right? You guys messed up Peter Parker in the first one. Peter Parker is one of the easiest characters in literature, and you messed him up. Let's see you correct your mistakes in the second one. And notice, I've gone all of this. I haven't even talked about Rhino, and I haven't even talked about Electro. The reason why is, you know what? They make no difference right here. They messed up the core character in the first one. Let's see you fix that. And that's something I can't gain from a trailer. I got to see it during the film. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
I didn't think that his characterization of the first one was a poor one, Darryl. The only thing I didn't like was the way that the mythology worked from the comic book to the film. For the first iteration of Spider-Man, when we saw Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, everything down from his wrestling match and letting the criminal go, and then that criminal ends up killing his uncle. That was dead on point as far as what we saw in the comics. That's the mythology. The second one, they did some wacky thing that had nothing to do with what was written. What was written made sense, that he was a goofball. He got caught up in his powers. The whole "with great power comes great responsibility," that tagline is directly connected to his origin. This, what they did in the second one, they went somewhere else that doesn't really have anything to do with him.
Wait, you misunderstand. That's what I'm talking about. When I say first one, I mean in this series. When I talk Tobey Maguire's one, Tobey Maguire nailed the first two films. The first two films were nailed. When I say first one, I'm referring to the first Amazing Spider-Man movie. All right? I'm not referring back to Tobey. Okay.
That's what I thought you meant. But you made it seem as if you had a problem with the actual actor for the second one.
No. I don't have a problem with Garfield in the role. I have a problem about how Peter Parker was written. He was written as a slacker. He was written he wasn't written as being inventive. He was written at parts being a total douchebag. This ain't Peter Parker. Like I said, when you get the fundamental character wrong, how could Spider-Man be right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I will say just one thing, that him catching that car on his back was cool. That was cool. But again, I mean, I'm going to see it, right? But again, at 3 minutes, like 2 minutes and 40-something seconds, I was like, you know what? I almost know what the movie's about from beginning, middle, and end. I don't have to see it. It's just, you know, come on. Calm down. You know, people are going to see it. You're going to make some kind of, it's, like you said, it reeks of desperation. And
Now I got to play devil's advocate. How long was that Captain America trailer, the last one?
But they broke it up, though. Like, they gave you that trailer at the beginning of Thor. That's more of a smooth marketing thing. They didn't just give you like some straight. They broke that up a little bit. Before they gave you that coup de grace, they gave you a little bit, and then they increased the meal. They didn't give you the full entree. First time out. This is the first time we've seen a trailer. The trailer could have easily been. Listen, the Maguire trailer before they had it where all you saw was webbing. And cars stuck between the Twin Towers before that became, you know, you really can't do that with the Twin Towers anymore. But they did a sneak attack with it. They led you into it. This one looks like they're desperate. You know, we didn't see that full-length Captain America thing until we went to the theater. Before Thor. I don't know. Something's funny in Denmark. That's what I'm saying. Or in Fresh Metals, Queens, where Peter Parker's from. All right. Moving right along, I want to also talk about X-Men Apocalypse. Now, we're seeing that director Bryan Singer, he threw that out there before Days of Future Past, that now after this X-Men, by 2016, we're looking at Apocalypse being, I would assume, the major villain, the world's oldest mutant. Any thoughts on that, Daryl?
I think that Bryan Singer, for as many of his mess-ups, Born Showman, and what he just did is he dangled a giant carrot out there. The problem is, Brian, and I refer back to Wolverine and the X-Men, all right? If you tease this, you gosh darn better well deliver. There are so many fans that have asked me about this. Like, D, is it really happening? Hey, Benny, is it really happening? Okay, are we finally going to see it? And all I thought to myself was, Brian, you put it out there. You let it slip. This is something that's been a bugaboo with most X-Men fans for a long time, ever since that Age of Apocalypse series came out in print, that they've wanted to see this. And we've been teased so many times. This is the X-Men version of Warner Brothers' Wonder Woman movie, folks. This is what this is. This is a carrot. Once you put it out there, you gosh darn better deliver. All right? Because you just raised up. Everybody's hopes is now raised. We don't want to hear about any mistakes if you don't pull this one off. Let's put it that way. Cap?
Well, you could always say you didn't get the budget for it.
Oh, God.
Put it on the suit. That's a smart thing, you know? That's a smart thing to do. You know, it's out of my hands. They didn't allow it. You know, they didn't allow it. That would be the movie to see, though. If they could just make it decent, that would be the movie to do. That's the movie to do right there. That's a good one. I didn't see that coming. I didn't see that coming. And that's all I'll say about it. Back over to you, Sir Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, I'm wondering about the timing of his announcement. I mean, maybe because all these other things are going on with the Gal Gadot announcement and this Man of Steel talk, and you know, maybe he's concerned about his film being lost in a sauce, so to speak. That's coming up, what, 2014 is Days of Future Past, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of competition out there. You factor in Spider-Man and Captain America, Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, it's going to be an incredible, you know, each year they seem to really pull out all the stops, man. So we'll see. I mean, I that's intriguing, but I will repeat what I said with Spider-Man. Fox and Sony, I have issues with them when we have to pretend that these other characters have no relation to these worlds. And it's getting to the point where it's frustrating. You know, when a Marvel movie comes out, you know, you feel like that you're dealing with an expanded universe. These standalone films, look even what Warner Brothers is doing. Look at the necessity of what's happening here. Warner Brothers has made it where they're trying to get into an interconnectedness. You know, they're throwing everybody in the mix now. Flash, Wonder Woman, Nightwing, all this stuff, and yet X-Men, they're by themselves, Spider-Man's by himself. I mean, it's corny. I hate to be repeating myself, ladies and gentlemen, but that's what gets me, even with this, we're going into 2016, and we're going to see another X-Men film. No walk-ons with no other Marvel heroes. Come on, man.
Well,
they got to figure that out. Well, I mean, look, we've seen, matter of fact, hold on. We have to remember that joint movie houses have worked together in the past. Maybe not for superhero films, but it's not unprecedented for two studios to work together on a specific project. So I don't know why all of a sudden it seems to be impossible for Sony to work with Marvel. We've seen other projects in the past as joint projects. Why all of a sudden it appears like we're trying to split the atom?
Well, you know what?
We're talking about.
Hey, that's why when the Quicksilver Silver Witch Scarlet Witch thing happened earlier, Fox came across like they were Stanley Media. They came across like they were a giant joke, you know, where, you're gonna throw a little hissy fit at the Avengers planning to use these characters because the word mutant is associated with them. You can't see the cross-promotional, cross-economic possibilities of having them appear in the Avengers movie? Because there's people, and I could tell you, I've talked to a couple of them, there's people that have gone and seen Avengers and loved it, but I bring up, you know what, you really got to get your start with watching Blade and watch X-Men. Like, no, those movies aren't for me, but Avengers, that was for me. And it leaves you scratching your head. You have a Quicksilver Silver Witch appear in the Avengers movie. They're mutants? Wait a second. Weren't the X-Men mutants too? Holy, what have I been missing? Let me go back and take a look at some of those films. Yes, you have those type of people out there. You know, but again, money and short-sightedness. That's the problem with these houses. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Mr. Afro-Nerd, a.k.a. Blackfelt. Now, you know
yes.
This probably better than anybody. You know when people are standing around measuring their penis,
back
to salacious remarks. Nothing gets done, or very little gets done. You have to put that aside, you understand, and see the bigger picture. And that's what these individuals, that's what they're doing. And when they're left with no choice, that's when everyone goes, okay, you know, maybe mine isn't bigger than yours. Let's do this and let's do that. You know?
Well, I don't know if I would use that analogy. I'm not familiar with measuring the of phalluses.
This is what they do in the business world, man.
I will say this. I just think that, listen, I understand what, well, really, I don't understand why. I mean, I know why. I don't understand why. I know what is going on. I know that it's really about legal manipulation. The fans want this, and it also deals, you know, when you deal with the creative end of it, the creative end will tell you that they hit brick walls. You know, when we deal with Marvel Cosmic, which is what they're going to do with the Guardians of the Galaxy film, not being able to use the Silver Surfer because he's connected with the Fantastic Four is a problem. So, you know, we've seen these storylines that had all these people, these characters interconnected, and now we're going to be hitting, you know, faulty plot lines. It becomes a problem when you don't have these characters involved in these franchises. So we'll see. I mean, ultimately, this is going to be straightened out, but Fox is making so much money. That's another thing, too. His announcement makes it where, you know, Fox just keeps on putting out X-Men films. Because if they didn't, like what happened with Daredevil, the rights would revert back to Marvel. But they're not giving up that cash cow. No sirree. So it's going to remain sucking for a while, I think. No.
But
so we'll
did
see.
You like the last movie?
I did, but there's something wrong when you can't have a casual walk-on from some other Marvel character. It's just a complete X-Men universe. The world's only about mutants. And then when the Avengers comes out, they're going to have the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, but there's no mentioning of Magneto, no mentioning of their mutant past. I mean, that's a major storyline that you can't, you know, there's got to be a way to close up that plot line when the Avengers come in. When they come in as the Avengers, they're just going to pop up, poof, here we are, we're superheroes. That's not the way it works. Matter of fact, they're even talking about the Inhumans. Now, when the Inhumans come out, when they deal with that, they're allegedly going to use the Inhumans as a mutant-esque kind of thing in the MCU, Marvel Cinematic Universe. So because they don't have mutants, they're kind of sort of going to lean on the Inhumans device to work in a mutant type of thing. That's corny.
That's whack.
But it's what they're doing, because that was the whole point of this Infinity thing, to raise the profile of Inhumans, and the next arc starting off is Inhumanity. So that hey, it's Marvel's effort to raise the Inhuman profile to the point where people will know them in passing conversation by the time the movie with them involved gets launched.
Listen, gentlemen, let's go to another quick Yuletide groove. When we get back, I want to talk more seriously. It's still going to be pop culture. We're going to have to talk about Mr. Nelson Mandela's passing. We've got to talk about Paul Walker's passing. But even before that, the Inner Sanctum last week, got a chance to check out the second iteration of The Hunger Games, Catching Fire. And I don't know if we actually spoke about that, but I had a blackout moment with the captain in transit, after we saw the film, something dawned on
movie.
Me.
I'm going.
Oh, you didn't?
Let me get a drink.
I wasn't with you.
I forgot. Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Oh yeah. Well, no, you were with me. Weren't you?
I think he just had a blackout moment now.
That's how good it was.
Oh, yeah, you were there. Yeah.
Oh, God.
No.
We spoke about this at length because I blacked out afterwards. So we'll talk about it when we get back, folks. Again, this is the Grindhouse Mashup. Let's go to another Yuletide groove. This is Rufus Thomas. I'll be your Santa, baby. We'll be right back. Let's groove. Legendary soul artist. That was Rufus Thomas. I'll be your Santa, baby. I think Rufus also did Hold On, I'm Coming. Hold On, I'm Coming. So definitely a cool Yuletide groove, folks. This is the Grindhouse edition of AfroNerd / The Comic Shop. We have a lot more show to go to. Feel free to buzz in if you like. The water is warm. The eggnog is warm, I should say. 646-915-9620. 646-915-9620. I want to talk about the Hunger Games Catching Fire, the second iteration of this franchise. I enjoyed the first one. The second one wasn't bad, but I think I had a blackout moment, the street term meaning that I got a little upset. And what happened, this is where we get into an Afro-nerd discussion. I happened to see quite a few trailers leading up until the film. And the trailer showed fantastic trailers. I mean, not fantastic, they were necessarily good, but just out of this world fantasy with white protagonists. And because we have a certain show here where we try to, although it's called Afro-Nerd, we want everyone to enjoy it, we also talk about the need to see images of black folk, brown folk, yellow folk, people of color involved in things that are non-stereotypical. And when I saw, I think, the Walter Mitty film that's coming out, and that character is being seen doing all kinds of fantastic things. There are so many films that just, I said, that, no, black folks can't do anything fantastic? We're seeing slavery films. We're seeing middle-class imagery, which is a good thing, but, middle-class romantic rom-coms, we're seeing that. But we don't see us in space. We don't see us fantasizing beyond the normal, so to speak. What's normal is either you're a minstrel, or if you're not a minstrel, thankfully, you're a slave, and that story has to be told begrudgingly. That story does have to be told. We have to be historically astute about what happened to us during the Middle Passage. We do have to know that. But I don't know if that's the only thing we should be seeing. So when I saw these trailers, I said, you got to be kidding me. And then we see the Hunger Games, where it definitely had a slavery analogy. We saw Liam Hemsworth, Chris's brother, he gets whipped, and I blacked out for that. I said, wait a minute. He gets whipped for a few seconds, and he has to get drugs to deal with it. What did he get, morphine?
Morphine, yeah.
What did they give us? They gave us pepper, salt, astringent. They didn't give you morphine. Their slave stories were people were whipped for 2 hours. Slaves were whipped. I know this is fantasy, but if you're going to do some slick stuff where you're connecting, you're having kind of a slavery analogy, which is what that was, it falls short. A couple of lashes and you need morphine. Where was our morphine 100 years ago or 150 years ago? Maybe it was too close in proximity to 12 years of slave. I had a blackout moment. I said, you got to be kidding me. But I don't know if it was a good film or not, because there was so many things going on before and during and after that took me out of the film. I almost couldn't enjoy it. Darryl, what are your thoughts on The Hunger Games, the second one?
It was okay. Again, Hunger Games, I think, is something more for teenagers, something more for those folks that are in love with the books. I'm neither in love with the books or I go like my Hunger Games was Battle Royal. I'm sorry. It still stinks so much of Battle Royal. Battle Royal meets the lottery. That's what Hunger Games is to me. And, folks, if you don't know what the lottery is, you better just go to your library right now and read that, okay? But that's what Hunger Games is, a mixture of Battle Royal meets the lottery. And no matter how much you want to doll it up and make it all clear, it's another, we make it look so young, so hip. We're dealing with war. We're dealing with emotional issues. We're dealing with hunger. But we'll make it look so clean, so nice. That's what Hunger Games is to me. That's what Ender's Game was to me. That's what, for these crowds, we'll just make it so, so pleasing to the kids. It's like visual crack. Does it help the generation any? Do they learn anything out of this? Do they get anything out of this? No. Do they get the lessons? No. Again, it's for other people. Other people could lose their thing about it. I can't. The one thing about Hunger Games I will give them is their soundtracks I commented on this to friends earlier this week. Their soundtracks, you may not like the artists, but their soundtracks are some great, great current folk music type stuff. With the Civil Wars, Kid Cudi, Coldplay, they have some great artists on their soundtracks that I recommend the soundtracks, because if you're any measure pissed off, you put their soundtracks on, guaranteed your troubles will just melt away. All right? But as for the movie itself, I could take it or leave it. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, Captain, you were there. You caught me off guard for a moment. What were your thoughts about this thing?
Now listen, there's no need to debate with this movie. This movie was just passing at best. When a movie's really good, you're talking about it hours, days, months, even years. We're still talking about the second installment of the Batman trilogy. Come on, because it was that good. There's nothing to debate whether or not this movie was good or not. It wasn't good. It's just passive. It generated a lot of money. You know, the book sold a lot, but it wasn't a good movie. Come on. And far as your blackout moment, let's talk about it. Who are the real supermen? We do fantasy as black people all the time. The problem with us, the American black anyway, the day-to-day, the real-world stuff, we make that fantasy. We are the ones that run, jump, physically strong, do all kinds of music, dancing, create things out of thin air. That's considered fantasy. But what we have a tendency to do, the real-world stuff, like not going to school, like going to school, should I say, we make that into fantasy. But because of the Nigerians, the most educated nationality, they work on real-world stuff. So we know these are things that the American black could definitely be doing to a very, very, very high level if the culture was changed. That's all, simply put. So we know who the real Superman is. It's black people, because we do the fantasy day in and day out. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Yeah, you know, you reminded me of a rant that I went into. that's what got me is that, and I don't want to lambaste our white listeners. I want them to understand exactly what I'm saying. It's just that I think, and this has been discussed with white folk as well, that always seeing a person having the answer, always seeing the white person, the white character as the main dude. Even from a white perspective, from younger white folk, that's the reason why we have Barack Obama in the White House right now, because sometimes everything gets stale if you see the same thing over and over again. And looking at those trailers, I said, this is unbelievable. The world is much larger. You're talking about a multi-racial, multi-ethnic, different age ranges. I mean, you're talking about a really diversified country as well as world. But to always have a 1950s paradigm when you make these movies, and segueing into some of the comic books that we discussed, it grates on my nerves. And I think that before I went in to see The Hunger Games, I said, wait a minute, you know, we're seeing a white heroine. And then on top of that, you know, to be fair with The Hunger Games, they, especially the last one, they were very much into multiracial casting, as it was described in their books. Fan base will tweet out about how disgusted they were. I'm using the right word. How disgusted they were with having black and brown representation on screen for characters that were described as such. So even when a book plainly describes a character as being having a darker complexion or what have you, you still see white. They demand white when it's not even written that way. You know, now the Jeffrey Wright character, Jeffrey Wright is a phenomenal actor. I believe that character was supposed to have been a white character. But really, coming down to his role, it just didn't make a difference. It just doesn't matter. But the rant that you were going into that I also discussed, film, was that, you know, looking at white, looking at, and I don't want to, again, I'm being very specific, looking at a sole white heroine or hero doing the spectacular, I had to sit back and think, wait a minute, you know, black folk in reality do the fantastic all the time. That's not fantasy. When you see, I can't speak for some of our new musicianship. I can't say that I will go to Pusha T. I will not go to Pusha T or the 2 Chainz for giving me the spectacular. But Jimi Hendrix, Ray Charles, Prince, Michael Jackson, Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, Lady Day, Miles Davis, Stevie Wonder, I can go on and on. I can keep on going. Al Green, whatever. They gave me the spectacular. Sammy Davis Jr., a diminutive man, not unlike Prince, diminutive. James Brown, for Christ's sake. These guys gave you the spectacular. When you think of Sidney Poitier, how dynamic he was in the 60s, he gave you the spectacular. Dr. J, Michael Jordan, I can name Jim Brown on the football field. They gave you the spectacular. Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar gave you the spectacular. Anytime you wanted it. Althea Gibson gave you the spectacular. Come on now. The Williams sisters, they give you the spectacular all the time. Barack Obama, love him or hate him, especially the first time out, first black president, you saw a halo around this guy. You saw a bright light around Obama. We just, our dear Nelson Mandela, spent 27 years in prison, gave you the spectacular. So why aren't we seeing representation on screen when we see it in real life? We see people doing phenomenal things. Jesse Owens at the 1936 Olympics gave a middle finger, figuratively, to Hitler, to the Führer. He gave him the middle finger by performing at a beyond human level. Made Hitler shake his boots. So you see what I'm getting? Frederick Douglass. There's so many people that did so many phenomenal things, and yet I have to see Walter Mitty on screen. It's just, at some point it gets tiring. And slavery was the real Hunger Games, mind you. Since they brought that has segued into an Afro nerd moment, ladies and gentlemen.
That was deep. That line.
But when you, well, it's true. I thought about that as well. If you're going to analogize the Hunger Games to slavery, giving a guy that got maybe 4 or 5 slashes, morphine, when there's been slave tales, not a real tale. I want to give people an impression that it wasn't real. You have slave diaries, slave documentation that spoke about slaves being whipped for hours. Whipped for hours. A few minutes? You need morphine? Really? But the Hunger Games, the being chased down, going through the woods, having to evade predators. Slavery was the Hunger Games. Or were the Hunger Games, excuse me. Slavery, that were the Hunger Games. Was the Hunger Games, excuse me. Real life Hunger Games. So I had a flashback or something. I couldn't enjoy it. Too close to 12 Years a Slave. I saw it in too close proximity, I think. I don't know. Things have got to change, and also to be fair, because we're fair here. It's not on white people, it's not on them, because on some level, hear this, folks. They're supposed to worship themselves. On some level, we have to learn to do the same thing. That's the main thing throughout this entire diatribe. As much as I don't want people to think that I'm looking for white people to give me my black mythologies, my black heroism. But it's time for black folks to start to produce, without shame, to start to produce their own
view of the spectacular on screen. Because as much as I respect the Best Man Holiday, between the Best Man Holiday and Tyler Perry wearing a dress, that does not speak to me as being the spectacular. Sorry, it doesn't. That's it.
That's also why I kind of hope and Mr. Mims will no doubt grace us with his presence again in future episodes. I want to hear the results of the contest when he makes a I want to know where our future filmmakers and our free thinkers are and what kind of scripts they're coming up with. I'm very curious as to that.
Critical Dre, to Debert, the captain alluded to this before, images are more important than literature, music, or news. Why do you not understand that white culture does not want to see people of color be the hero? Bollywood, Hong Kong cinema, and Japanese manga and anime, I think he's going to continue something, but I get his drift. Well, listen, there's such a thing as Nollywood.
Yep.
The Nigeria film industry is a pretty booming one. I think it's second under Bollywood. So what I don't understand is that allegedly America houses the most wealthiest black folk. Okay? So how do you explain, and I'm glad they're doing it, because I still put myself in there. It's still African people. It's still people of color. But how do you explain Nollywood, Nigeria, having their own film industry, a codified industry unto themselves. Matter of fact, I believe they do science fiction. I think there's a science fiction film out of Nollywood from about a year ago that I have to check into that's what's that film you always refer to, Captain, with it deals with kind of like perfect human beings. It's a classic with husband and wife, they were in it. They're divorced now.
Perfect human beings, husband and wife.
The wife is Quentin Tarantino's muse.
I'm still lost.
No, okay. Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about. He played with Denzel in I just mentioned it. In The Training Day.
He
played the rookie cop. He played the rookie cop, and he was married to I can't think of it. Uma Thurman.
The Island.
That movie sucked. No, it was
Gattaca.
It was
Gattaca.
Yeah, Gattaca.
Yeah.
Oh, Gattaca.
Okay.
Yeah. We were going to get to it somehow.
Yeah.
Nollywood, if I'm not mistaken, film out of Nigeria, that looked to be pretty well made. That is reminiscent of Gattaca, except black people. Since I'm talking about it, after this broadcast, I'm going to look it up and see if I can get it. But see where I'm going here. In Nigeria, they made a science fiction film, Black Style. Excellent. And got some burn. But why are we in the Americas where other black folks look to us and we're doing, you know, shine movies, dare I say?
Well, that's why
shine movies and minstrel movies.
That's why, for as many strides as some people would like you to believe, with Oprah and BET and all their related things, I say to black nerds, they're a disappointment. Because where is our Star Trek? Where is our action adventure series? Where is our, you know, horror fantasy series, you know? It just goes back to the misconception that our community has that, you know what, we're just not into sci-fi. We're not fantasy folk. It's a giant misconception, all right? One that we have disproven since day one of this program. All right, but you know what? I read a comic on the train. There's something wrong with me. I'm going to check out Star Trek in the theater. There's something wrong with me. All right, We as a people have to expand our thinking. We can't expect Hollywood and other forms of media to expand their thinking to include us if we can't include us ourselves. Back to you, Afrinur.
Yeah, that's the key component, isn't it, Daryl? I mean, I believe last show we quoted Joe Morgan, actor Joe Morgan, and he went into the same kind of rant. Spoke about, you know, there's a danger with some of these slavery films, and I think that, listen, the slavery films, not unlike the Holocaust films, when you talk about historical wrongs, you've got to get the story straight. So those stories are important. And even within the slavery genre, there are tangents within that genre that have to be told also. You got to talk about the revolts. You got to talk about black folk that, you know, what about Toussaint L'Ouverture, the Haitian Revolution? That's a story that we seem to not be able to tell. But when it comes down to perpetual victimhood, that story we can always tell. When it comes down to stories of just victimization and kind of a ghetto kind of aesthetic, or men in 6'5" men in dresses, they can get green-lighted in an instant. There's no great deliberation on those films. But if you were to talk about, you know, as much as I might have had issues with Will Smith's film with his son, I looked at it proudly because I said, hey, at least it's for all intents and purposes, a black sci-fi movie. It's a black man with his black son in the future on a big scale. Now, maybe if it was done differently, or maybe if it was a better writing, whatever the problems were, maybe, you know, it would have performed better. But I admit, I will at least give him props for considering it, that we have to break out of genres. And also, you know, I always reference how things used to be. When we had less money, less power, and we were under segregation, believe it or not, we had more of a codified black film industry. You had black-owned, and some of them were white-owned, we also had a fair share of black-owned movie theaters that showed specifically race films. They were, at that point, they really were called race films. But they're calling race films. They're using a term now in the 21st century, which is kind of funny. USA Today, they had to take it back, but their immediate reaction was Best Man Holiday was a race film. But we haven't heard that terminology. We heard that terminology 60, 70 years ago. But believe it or not, you had black westerns, you had black horror shows, you had black dramas to be show, a phenomenal, legendary film of the filmmaker of the classic period. He and other black filmmakers made films like that for predominantly black audiences in black theaters. Now we don't even have the distribution centers for that anymore per se. That's something that needs to be explored. Why can't we have black-owned theaters in predominantly black communities where we are able to distribute these films internally, and then the interest might be garnered externally? Because I wouldn't want these films to be seen just by black people. But I do think that they should, and for money to circulate, Captain, like 1920, Tulsa, Oklahoma is 1920, we saw that money circulating internally 26 times. Now, in the 20th century, you don't know what to do.
And that's why also the loss of Nelson Mandela, which we're going to get into, is going to be a bigger loss in a philosophical standpoint across the board. And people may be going, well, how am I going to tie Nelson Mandela into this? You will see in a moment. But it's a bigger loss philosophically across black communities, not just in South Africa, but the world. I'm telling you this right now.
On that note, let's go to a quick clip of instant news, courtesy of YouTube, where they unpack Nelson Mandela, the great Nelson Mandela's passing, South Africa's first black president and first democratically elected president, but first black president of South Africa. Nelson Mandela has left the room, the Lion of South Africa. So, let's go to this quick news clip, and then we will discuss further. Hold on.
Fellow South Africans, our beloved Nelson Rolihlahla Mandela, the founding president of our democratic nation, has departed. He passed on peacefully in the company of his family around 2050 on the 5th of December 2013. He is now resting. He is now at peace. Our nation has lost its greatest son. Our people have lost a father. Although we knew that this day would come, nothing can diminish our sense of a profound and enduring loss. His tireless struggle for freedom and him the respect of the world. His humility, his compassion, and his humanity and him their love. Our thoughts and prayers are with the Mandela family. To them we owe a debt of gratitude. They have sacrificed much and endured much so that our people could be free. Our thoughts are with his wife, Mrs. Graca Machel, his former wife, Miss Winnie Madikizela Mandela, with his children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, and the entire family. Our thoughts are with his friends, comrades, and colleagues who fought alongside Madiba over the course of a lifetime of struggle.
Okay, we're back. Thanks to Instant News on YouTube, that was a gentleman from South Africa, letting us know, the world know, that Nelson Mandela, former president of South Africa, has passed at the age of 95. Now, we understand that for the last couple of years he was having health concerns. He was already in advanced age, but he seemed to always be able to regain his health. But unfortunately, he was he expired at 95 years of age. And when I think of Nelson Mandela as an American, there's so many connections to the South African struggle with what happened in the United States, because we had our own version of apartheid. You know, we call it segregation, but it's still apartheid, the separation of the races. And I will say this, in the 80s, if you were a young person in the 80s, apartheid seemed to be crazy. And I emphasize being young because when you're young, you have absolutely no sense of time. You just don't. So if you were, okay, let's say you were a young person in 85, 86, 10, 15, 20 years of age in the mid-80s, you were not aware of segregation. You were not. You would have known about segregation through your studies or through your parents or grandparents, but you never really lived it. Time between segregation and 1985, if you were a preteen or a teenager, was nothing. You're talking about, let's say, under 20 years. But I will say personally, I thought looking at South Africa, well, how could they still be living under apartheid? It's 1985. This is nuts. It's only now that some time has passed that I can look back on that and say, heck, there really wasn't that much of a time difference, really. When you talk about 15, 20 years, not a lot of time. So we should have been far more, I should have been far more conscious of the time deal with what happened with apartheid in South Africa and segregation here in the States. But I would assume that he would be very much analogous to Dr. Martin Luther King, except that he had the opportunity to live to 95 years of age. But he did do his time. He did 27 years. 27 years. And actually had an opportunity to get out early. I believe, was it Bota? President Bota offered him a chance at an early release if he had made some concessions. And he refused to do that. So he stayed in for another, where he wasn't released until 1990, so it took about another 5 years. He took the hit. But he did 27 years at, I think, a number of prisons, but the most famous and hellish prison in South Africa is Robben's Island. So, and then to come from being in prison to ending up being the president of South Africa, democratically elected president. Amazing story. And I would advise our listeners to really do the research on this man now that he has passed, because you were fortunate enough to have lived while he lived. And I, you know, Dr. King, I'm an admirer of Dr. King's, admirer of El-Haj Malik, El-Shabazz, of Malcolm X, but they're so mythological. They're not as tangible to me. Not really, you know, they're not as tangible. Mandela lived in our time. That's the closest you're going to get to someone of the Malcolm X, of the Dr. King status in real time. That was Nelson Mandela. Let's go to the captain. Captain, what are your thoughts on this? And then we go to Daryl B.
Actually, let's go with Daryl B. first. You know? Let's go with Daryl B. first. I'll pass it back over to Daryl. Let's go with him first. Then he can pass it to me.
Yeah. Thoughts on Nelson Mandela's passing?
Okay, just to give folks a point of reference, you could check it out on YouTube, ESPN's 30 for 30 series. They did early on, which is a series of movies that they do that are often sports-related, all right, about life and times done by some of Hollywood's best directors, okay? They did a movie called The 12th Man about the same time Invictus came out. All right? Matter of fact, it was done by Invictus's director. All right? He did this also, which was I wouldn't say fact-based, but it covered the story of his imprisonment and the whole 1995 rugby team through the eyes of not only the players, but the some of his opponents in the African National Congress, okay? And it explained that he set up in prison, knowing that he would eventually come out someday, he set up in their rules for playing soccer and rugby in prison, he set up an actual government in prison. Okay. In addition to that, when he supported the South African rugby team, the symbol for the Springboks was used on so many items of hate that he had people within that National Congress hating on him that he would support them. And Mandela's words, and they're famous, and I'm going to butcher this, was that, look, they're not their team. They're not a black team. They're not a white team. They are South African team. Essentially, that's what he said. This is a team for the country. We are all part of the country. How can I stand for unity if I dismiss this? And it's powerful. It is a powerful statement because essentially he is saying that he's willing to look past the symbol of hate, that it was the stigma that it was attached to, all right? But he was free-thinking enough to know that success was South Africa's success. It's something that not enough of us are free-thinking. I know I am not at times. This free-thinking where I can look past the problems that are present in front of me to look down the line, to look towards the future, all right? We often said that Tony Stark, you know, on the other show, is a futurist. If that is so, then Nelson Mandela, 29 years in prison, he was already thinking ahead to when he got out and how to improve his nation. And God bless him, man, Mr. Mandela, you did, and I am proud, a proud black man to ever learn about you, to ever study about you, to ever follow you. I can talk about Gandhi. I can talk about Martin Luther King. But you know what? I've lived and experienced Mandela, and I don't think there's much better than that. Captain, all yours.
Well said. Definitely well said. That's why I gave you the floor first. I felt you had something powerful to say, and I didn't want you to get caught in the time constraints that we have with the show. I will be a lot shorter. I'll be brief. There isn't words in the human, let's not say, maybe there is words in the human, but not in the English vernacular, to describe this man, his greatness, his achievements. I don't think there is any words whatsoever. So being what Afro Nerd said, and being what Daryl B. just said, what I will say to the listener, just to add slightly on top of that, is do your due diligence, do your studies, look at this man's story, look at his history, go watch the movie, and here's the ironic thing, probably now everyone's really going to see it due to Nelson Mandela's passing, the movie with Idris Elba playing Nelson Mandela. Go see that. And I'm a little bit worried down the line for the future of South Africa. Not right now. Right now, everyone will mourn, which you should. Everyone will do the due diligence. They will study. If you're black, and maybe even if you're white, you'll look up a little bit more black history, try to understand what's going on, understand the time. But 15, 20 years down the line, what does South Africa hold? And I will leave you with that. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, just a couple of other things, too, I want to just put out there just for our audience's edification. One, I might have mentioned this before, but I'm going to repeat it anyway. Mr. Mandela was an attorney, and he set up the first black law firm in South Africa. So he was an intelligent, learned man. But he ended up doing 27 years because at some point, you know, he went in the direction of nonviolence. Let's be clear about this. He initially went into the direction of nonviolence. Then he went into a more militant direction, which is what got him imprisoned. He ended up developing a more militarized faction of the African National Congress. And that would, at some point, because he was up for charges in the mid-50s, and he beat them. In the 60s, when he was part of this militarized faction of the ANC, that's when they saw him as being an enemy of the state. And that's when they gave him life. We must also note, with America's involvement, people like Reagan, and I'm saying this as a conservative, but I'm no big fan of Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan and his ilk deemed Nelson Mandela as a terrorist. It was many folks in this country who deemed him to be a terrorist.
Dick Cheney.
So, yes, Dick Cheney. Well, yeah, right, Dick Cheney. Well, you know, that's Darth Vader himself. So, but he went from being a quote-unquote terrorist into walking into
power as the nation's first black president of South Africa. So I think that should be noted. It was an illegitimate regime. You're talking about the Afrikaners, a all-white or a mostly white regime with blacks and coloreds being underneath that hierarchical structure. That was their form of segregation. So we know that segregation in this country was implausible or was a wrong, and so was apartheid. So I just hope, just pretty much chiming in with what Daryl said and what the captain said, is that we learn from this man, that we study his journey. And really, you know, for someone who make that sacrifice, I mean, the way that folks bitch and moan about their little trivialities of life, he was on a hard cement floor. No bathroom. You know, he had a bucket that he had to go into. 27 years, and he was only allowed one visitor per year for 30 minutes. And when given the opportunity to even take off some time from this lengthy sentence, but he was told that he would have to make some concessions, he said, no, I'm not going to do that. So, you know, if you're going to go to jail, black men, if you're going to go to jail, then be that political prisoner. Go for a reason. Dr. Cosby says, for stealing someone's pound cake and going to jail for innocuous reasons. That is the type of person you would want to. And on top of that, he made the sacrifice and ended up somehow becoming the president of the country. So that's a whole different ball of wax. If you're going to do that, there's got to be some real sacrifice involved. You don't do that because you're killing some other person, you're killing a child or some grandmother. What we see with the dysfunctionalism in our country, the reasons that we see men, young black men going to prison, they don't measure up compared to what this man did. Folks, the grindhouse has come to an end. We've got about a minute and such remaining. Enjoy your holidays. Gentlemen, as always, we appreciate you coming through. Daryl and, of course, Captain Kirk. We'll do it again on Wednesday, folks. Daryl, you may even want to stop by for this one because the folks from Afropunk are coming through, and we're going to have a pretty deep discussion as to where I think the music should go, the movement, how can we hear Afropunk, perhaps in some kind of format besides Afro Nerd Radio. There's a lot to discuss. What does it mean? You know, there's a T-shirt that was sold at Afropunk Festival. Hip-hop, now what does it say, Daryl? Hip-hop punk wants its style back. Talking directly to hip-hop. Hip-hop, punk wants its style back. So on that note, it's been real. We appreciate the support. Let's go out in a quick groove. Is Ponce Man, Xmas Machine. See you on Wednesday.
L?
Yeah!
Santa's ready to get up and do his thing.
Yeah!
I want to get into it, man. You know,
yeah.
like a crisp machine, man.
Yeah!
Jiggling,
yeah.
Decking the hall,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah!
Can I count it off?
Yeah!
Ho, 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 ho!